thinking you can afford private health insurance, you deserve better treatment. Let me know what you think. The number's 087-188-0008.
You're listening to Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan. Got an opinion?
Hello.
Then get on the phone. 0818 942 105.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio. Ireland's Classic Hits Radio is a non-stop journey through your favourite ever classic hits.
And now, you can revisit even more musical memories as we invite you back to the future.
Where we're going, we don't need headphones.
Jump on board each day as we aim our DeLorean at a different classic year. But where will the memories take you?
Back to the Future. Play along with Ruth Scott, Sunday evenings from 6. And with Trina and Damien right through the week.
The kids are going to love it.
Only on the home of the 80s and 90s, Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
When your smoking cravings creep up on you, Nicorette lozenges are clinically proven to start fighting cravings in just 2 minutes with a rapid burst of fresh flavor. You're up to 2 times more likely to quit with Nicorette. Versus willpower alone, Nicorette Cool's 2 milligram lozenge contains nicotine. Stop smoking aid. Requires willpower. Always read the label.
There's nothing like a new phrase to get you thinking differently. So we'll soon be hearing a lot about the circular economy. It just means keeping our stuff in circulation for as long as possible by repairing and reusing, by sharing and swapping. The government is taking steps to encourage all of us to embrace circular living as we rethink, repurpose, repeat. It's time to get circular. Find out more at gov.ie/circular economy, an initiative of the Government of Ireland.
For anniversaries that sizzle, celebrations that shine, and birthdays that really pop, it's all happening at Hyde, just off Grafton Street, Dublin 2. And now, Dublin's hottest venue is heating up even more with the launch of Seek Nightclub, open every Saturday night until late, with dancers, DJs, live entertainment, and more. Hyde and Seek has you covered for an unforgettable night. Contact reservations at hydedublin.com to book your VIP experience now.
You're listening to Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
With Recruit.ie, Ireland's new online job search. Search for your dream job today on Recruit.ie.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio. You're listening to Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan. Got an opinion?
Hello.
Then get on the phone. 0818 942 105.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Hi, I'm Megan Scully, and this is Crack August Kuehl on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio. Higovilas at 3, 4 and Tauron, Johnny Cash, Boss in Nashville, Tennessee. Vishé Shachtuahane.
And you could have it all.
Mian for Mila Nigaid Carr, Hui Michael Jackson, August Aban Hiela, Lisa Marie Presley, Aaron Staucha, Egna MTV VMAs. Ese in Hiedam, Avishi La Hiela, in Arts Pibley. Mila Nigaid Shachtu for Jimi Hendrix Boss in Notting Hill in London. Nirao She Achfish Shacht Mlina. That's Crack August Kuehl on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Across Ireland.
Across Ireland.
On FM.
Digital.
And on your smart speaker.
This is the home of the 80s and 90s.
This is Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
The news with Alan Cantwell. The US president has called for a two-state solution to end the violence between Israel and Palestine. Joe Biden was addressing the UN General Assembly in New York, where he said a diplomatic solution is still possible to prevent the further escalation of violence in the Middle East. He used his address to world leaders to also highlight the potential dangers of AI and to reaffirm US support for Ukraine. On the Middle East, he says all sides deserve to live in peace and called for an end to the war.
As we look ahead, we must also address the rise of violence against innocent Palestinians on the West Bank and set the conditions for a better future, including a two-state solution where the world, where Israel enjoys security and peace and full recognition and normalized relations with all its neighbors, where Palestinians live in security, dignity, and self-determination in a state of their own.
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky is due to meet world leaders at the UN General Assembly in New York tomorrow. His visit comes amid reports the US has agreed a new aid package worth $375 million. The increased numbers of people seeking asylum here are not recorded in the government's homeless figures. Taoiseach Simon Harris has been criticised for comments linking the two. However, the monthly homeless figures produced by the Department of Housing only account for those accessing emergency accommodation. According to the latest figure, 30% of new presentations into homelessness in Dublin this July had just left direct provision. Kitty Holland, social affairs correspondent with the Irish Times, says the majority of adults entering homelessness in the capital are not in that group.
70% of the people newly presenting as homeless adults are not in that category. They're coming from, overcrowding conditions, notices to quit by landlords, discharge from hospitals, coming out of prisons. All these people who are, coming into the system looking for housing and not being able to access it.
The Health Minister should appear before the Oireachtas Health Committee to answer questions over the National Children's Hospital. That's according to the Social Democrats, with the project set to be delayed even further. Members of the National Paediatric Hospital Development Board, which oversees the project, will answer questions as costs continue to spiral. Committee member Roisin Shortall says Stephen Donnelly and Robert Watt should join them.
I would prefer to see the minister there, I have to say, and the Secretary General. The Secretary General is the accounting officer for expenditure, and the minister should have oversight and be accountable for major infrastructural projects under his remit. And that's where we want to get the answers.
And that's your news for now.
Ireland's weather.
With McCarthy Insurance Group. For better value, home, farm, motor, life, health and business insurance in 2024. MIG.ie.
Cold and largely dry tonight with clear spells and just isolated showers. Rain starting to move across Munster and South Leinster. Lowest temperatures down to between 2 and 7 degrees. Europe Today to the home of amazing 80s each weekday at noon with Trina Mara on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Now, Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan on the home of the 80s and 90s.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
I'm just looking through your text. Now, the nurses and the doctors coming into this country are not the same ones that are getting off the boats in France. Who said they were, by the way? Nobody suggested that on the air tonight. I said the nurses and doctors that come into this country to work in our hospitals and the staff that work in our hospitals from all over the world who come to legitimate means, i.e. they come and they get a visa to work in Ireland. Nobody suggested there were people who were coming in on boats from France. I have no idea what you're talking about. That's a completely different set of people altogether. It's nothing to do with what the chaotic immigration problem that we seem to have in the country at the moment. Anyway, Simon Harris, I believe, obviously in trouble over the comments that he made. Although I'm not too sure about Katie Holland's story, which was mentioned there in the news, and she talks about it's only 30%. I haven't seen the actual figures, so I'm only going by what I heard in the news there. But I mean, 30%, even if it is 30%, are coming from direct provision. Surely that's a disproportionate number, because there isn't 30% of the population living in direct provision. So, do you understand what I'm saying? So it's a disproportionate number. I don't think Simon Harris is completely incorrect in the figures. Of course, by the way, immigration, when you see large numbers of people coming into the country, it has an effect on everything. Accommodation, GP services, education, places in education, places we have in school when we have a lot more young children coming in, for example. Of course, it has a disproportionate effect on the population. Anybody who thinks it doesn't is delusional. So we have to manage it properly. Anyway, getting back to our two-tier health system, let me go to Mary. Mary, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall. One second, I take you off loudspeaker because I'm drying my hair.
Good, is it dry?
Go on.
Is your hair dry?
Yes, I know.
Okay. Okay, I'd rather you didn't dry your hair while you're talking to me anyway. Okay, so you had an amazing experience in Cork University Hospital.
I had open heart surgery in Cork on the 25th, 2023.
Sorry?
And I have to say, the staff were fantastic. And when I was brought down, I was 9 hours on the table. And new valve I had to get, basically.
Yeah.
And the staff were just went above and beyond, I have to say.
How do you feel now, by the way, Mary? How are you feeling now? Are you okay?
Oh, yeah. I'm good, thank God. I'm good. Okay. I'm above ground.
Good. Well, that, you're above ground. That's the main thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're not below ground. And Mary, again, a lot of people say that once you manage to get into the system and get onto the operating table and get a bed, you will be treated well because the staff have the best intentions and want to treat everybody well.
Well, yeah.
But the problem is getting there, isn't it, for people?
No, see, the thing is, it was in my family. My father died of it. My brother dropped dead in Portugal of it. The same thing there. It's the aorta valve is gone.
Yeah, so it's hereditary. Yeah, it's a hereditary thing.
Hereditary, yeah.
Yeah.
And I had my pre-op and whatever. And he said, within the pre-op, I was called in 2 days after. Called back down to Cork. I'm in Limerick now. I live in Limerick. And he had said to me when I had it done, when he came around to, was it the aftercare, wherever that was, I can't remember now. Before I was brought to the ward, he said, I was there for 3 days because I ended up getting septic. That was down to St. John's fault. That's another story now. But they discovered that there was something wrong, that I had an infection somewhere. This is the night of my surgery now. You know, I had my surgery that morning.
Yeah. And that night, yeah.
That night, they discovered there was an infection somewhere, so up and out my torsion. And they did tell me before that to go to St. John's and get that removed, right? I did. They canceled it anyway, neither here nor there. And they had to get in John Carson attorney in the same building.
Your phone is a bit muffled or something, Mary. Are you on a speakerphone or something? No.
No, I have a
uranium lung. You're a little bit muffled. But okay, so Mary, can I go back to the original question? And I'm delighted, by the way, that you're on the mend and everything is good with you now. Can I ask you a question? Do you believe that there should be a two-tier system? In other words, private health insurance. So those who are paying for it, you know, can go to private hospitals, maybe be seen a bit quicker. Do you believe there should be a two-tier system?
That should work for anyone that's in serious situation. Personal system. Who has in a large city, right? He's gone private. They cancel that.
I can't understand a word you're saying, Mary. I do apologise. Your phone is very muffled.
It is very. That's happened the last time as well.
Yeah, it's really.
And I have the radio turned down.
No, it's nothing to do with the radio because the radio just creates an echo in the background.
It does, yeah.
No, it's not to do. It's to do with your phone. It's just very, very muffled. So, in other words, you're trying to tell me you have a brother who went into the private system for an operation, and what happened?
Sister,
go ahead.
My sister, yeah. Her kidney was enlarged, so they told her she'd be waiting 2 years. So, Magella decided to go private.
Yeah.
And she had her pre-op. She was to go in that Wednesday morning last week, and they cancelled it the day before.
Right.
Now, she's in constant pain, whatever. This is in the regional here, which is diabolical. You couldn't even pass there and you could see the crowds. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the hospital. But like I said, doesn't matter whether you're going private, it should work for everyone. If we're in pain, get it sorted. Nobody should be in pain.
Okay. Thanks for that, Mary. And I'm sorry about the difficulty with your phone. I'm glad you're feeling better. Let me go to Margaret. Margaret, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall. How are you tonight?
I'm good.
I need a better greetings.
Thank you very much indeed, Margaret.
I hope you had a nice day on Saturday.
I did. I had a beautiful, wonderful day because, of course, my wife always makes it the best day ever. We love cards. We get each other, like when it's birthdays, we always get loads each other about cards. 7 or 8 yeah. cards. Loads of cards.
Oh, I'm telling you. Was she hiding them around the house?
Presenting them at every hand's turn. Lovely, beautiful cards. Yep. So it was a lovely birthday. And I don't feel any older, even though I'm 1 year older. I don't feel
not
anything.
At all.
Yeah,
it's only in the mind.
Yeah, and thankfully that flu I had or whatever it was I had last week, the antibiotics seem to have cleared that up. Yeah.
You see, every year you get older, I always say to people, your metabolism is slowing down.
Well,
you see, and you need to eat more roughage, brown bread, porridge, all that type.
Yeah,
of
I'm on folic acid at the moment as well. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good for you as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, now we get back to the subject in hand.
Yeah.
I do agree that it should be a one-tier system. I have a medical card, and I have to say, when I had my cancer in 2018, I wasn't feeling well and I had a chest infection. And then the chest infection didn't clear up. And then I went back to the doctor and he said, look, I'm going to send you in for an x-ray on your, you know,
chest.
Lungs.
Yeah.
And I said, not at all. Just give me another antibiotic. It'll be fine. No, I'm going to give you another antibiotic because you need it. So anyway, went in the next day into Beaumont, got the x-ray done. Said to the girl, do I have to wait for the results? Not at all, she said. If there's anything wrong, we'll contact the doctor. Nothing wrong at all. To the girl, I said, he's panicking, you know.
Yeah.
I said, the old chest infection hasn't cleared up and he's kind of a bit worried about it. So off I went anyway. I was home here anyway and I was doing my bits and pieces. Get me lunch ready and at 12:30 the phone went and I said, Dr. Green, and how are you? Margaret, how are you? How are you feeling? And I said, I took the antibiotics. I said, you knock the stuffing out, you don't they? You know,
yeah, the chat which they do, yeah.
He said, your x-ray this morning, Margaret. He said, they've spotted something on it, on the x-ray. I said, that's probably the old infection. No, more serious than that, Margaret. And I said, he said, why don't you go in for a CAT scan on, this was Tuesday, Thursday morning, in Beaumont. So in I went anyway, got that done. And I said, well, how am I looking in there? I said to the girl, I'm not allowed to say. Well, I said, I have to chance my arm. There's nothing wrong with me at all, it's down chest infection. Off I went. Doctor phoned me.
By the way, was there a little part of you, can I ask you, Margaret, was there a little part of you thinking to yourself, even though you were pawning it off as a chest infection?
Yeah.
Was there a little part of you worried inside?
No, not at that stage. No, definitely not at that stage.
Okay.
So anyway, he rang me in the afternoon and says, Margaret, he said, wants you to go to Blackrock private for a MediScan, PAT scan. Mm. And what you do is you lie on the table in a room.
I know the machine.
For an hour. And then you go into this machine anyway.
And it makes a dreadful noise.
And this kind of crack, you know.
Frighten the life out of you, machine.
That's it. And so I get up off the table and the girl says to me, how are you feeling? I said, not bothering me, says I. I says, well, says I, did you spot anything? Because Beaumont said they spotted something. Did you spot it? I said, I'm not allowed to say, says I, for God's sake, says I, you're no good to me at all. And out of the room, I went, got dressed. And my sister was talking to the nurse, and she said, God, Margaret has gone for this and this and this and this. And she says, they obviously 100% sure she's cancer. And Mary got weak with the fight.
Right.
Anyway, so they were, I brought her for a cup of tea when I was in getting me thing done. And I said, well, God, says I, you must be starving. I said, you look like a ghost. Yeah, we go and get a cup of tea. And then she said, how did you get on? And I said, grandma, but I all this wasn't for no reason at all. But she knew, but she never said anything to me.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, I went back anyway to Beaumont and the consultant then told me that I had the cancer. And I said, sure. That's grand, says I, when are you bringing me in and cutting it out of me? I still made light of it, you see.
Yeah.
And the doctor says, Margaret, are you sure now? Did you hear what I said? And I said, of course I did.
It was kind of past the stage of cutting it out of you at that stage, was it?
See, my train of thought was, well, you know, medicine has moved on so much, Niall.
Yeah.
If that was 20 years ago, I'd say, that's it.
Yeah, ordered the coffin now, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going over the swords now, and I'm going to get your man to pick. I'm going to pick out me box or whatever, you know. But anyway, I went in anyway, and that was the 9th of April, and then in May 17th, I went into St. James's, and on the morning of the 18th, I had the operation, and they cut it out of me. And I was in the coma then until the Sunday evening. I woke up for 8:15. And I said, Did I have the operation yet? All over, Margaret. Well, it was the tube that was sticking out of my side was a killer.
By the way, do you remember being in a coma?
Not at all.
I often wonder if people remember.
No.
What do you...
No.
When they put the mask on your face and they tell you to count, you know, backwards from 10 or whatever.
No. You see, they had the yolk they put into your vein.
Oh, okay.
And I was yapping away to your woman, and I was saying, oh, says I, this won't be a bother at all, says I. And when I get this over and done with now, I'm going to go somewhere nice on the holiday, and that was the end of it. I don't remember a thing. Yeah. Until I woke up, and as I said to you, it was the tube, as I call it, the overflow tube, all the crap coming out of you. You know what I mean?
Jesus,
the operation.
Yeah.
And anyway, they came the next morning, and the consultant says, how are you feeling this morning? This tube is killing me. Nothing about me back. Now, I have a big scar on it, like a big J, you know, like a slash hoop. But anyway, he said, you know, press the white button. I said, what's that for? He said, that's morphine for you, Margaret. That's for the pain. Oh, I said, now you're trying to get me hooked on drugs. And he said, no. I have to say, Niall, in all honesty, between Beaumont Hospital and St. James's, they looked after me brilliantly.
And you're here to tell the tale.
Exactly.
Okay, very quickly, Mark, because I have to go to Pauline before I finish this up. Do you believe in a two-tier system? In other words, some people pay and they get treated quicker sometimes. Now, in certain circumstances, they don't get treated quicker.
I'll tell you the biggest problem A&E has in Ireland, and I've seen it myself, where you have patients in there drunk.
Mm.
And they are wasting staff time.
Yeah, patients who should be at a GP, not at a hospital. Yeah.
No, they should not, Niall. And because there's more seriously ill people in there, in the hospital. I was back there in January. I was very, very sick. And then I was transferred from St. James's over to the Bond Secure, and I spent 12 days there.
The only thing I will say is everybody who's in A&E thinks they should be in A&E. You might not think it, but they all think they should be.
But now,
otherwise they wouldn't be there.
What's happening is that people are drinking and then they're walking down the road or they're in Dublin or they're in...
Oh yeah, they're falling, hitting their heads and all sorts.
And they're falling and splitting themselves open. And
yeah, but they have to go somewhere, don't they? Even though they're pissed.
But now they're abusive to staff.
Well, that's unacceptable, by the way. They're abusive to staff. Well, what can you do? But they shouldn't be abusive to staff. Security need to deal with that. But if they do fall and split their head open, they still have to go somewhere. You can't just say, you're pissed, we're not dealing with you.
No, but as sick and all as I was myself there in January the 2nd it was.
Yeah.
And I said to this fellow, for God's sake, I'm sick listening to you rolling and shouting at staff and doctors. Will you shut up? And he looked at me. I said, just shut up and leave the staff alone. They ran off their feet. I said, sit there quietly like the rest of us. And when the doctor and the nurse has time to come and call your name, they will look after you.
Okay, well, hang on, Margaret, because I have to go to Pauline before I finish. So, Pauline, hi. It says on my screen, Pauline is livid.
I am livid listening to this.
Why are you livid?
First of all, I'd like to say I'm delighted about the speech bill. And your program was mentioned on a YouTube channel tonight. So that's very good. But don't let them push it through. There was a referendum a few years ago and they kept on putting it to the people until we got it right and agreed with them. So we don't need to make that mistake and we should not make that mistake again. So the one that we're talking about tonight is the one-tier or two-tier system. If we allow them to put a one-tier system in place, then they will jab you to death because you will not be allowed in unless you get your jab and you won't be able to go anywhere else. And all the special attention that those people who have suffered strokes, not all, I'm not saying all, but some may be, and they don't know yet, but a lot of specialists, a lot of professors, a lot of people very high up in the field who have been continuously taken off YouTube, the jab actually responsible for those. For the
you're talking about vaccines, by the way. Yeah.
Yes, and the special attention you get.
Okay, well, let me just clarify what you're trying to say. You're saying if we go to a single system operated by the state, that if ever we get into a situation like we were in 3 or 4 years ago, they won't treat people who haven't been vaccinated and you'll be forced to get vaccinated.
Right. They won't take you in unless you're jabbed. They'll be in control. So the last thing we want is a one-tier system. What we actually need are new hospitals with people who didn't push the jab, who didn't advocate that.
Well, there were some doctors, as you say, who didn't push the vaccine.
Yeah, they struck them off.
Yeah, so and by the way, I always believe vaccine should be a choice thing. It should be a choice. Yes.
It wasn't a vaccine. It wasn't a vaccine at all. It was gene therapy. Oh,
I'm not going to get into the do's and don'ts of it and whether you believe it is this or that. All I said was that during that time, I always believed, and many people did stand up for people's choice. And it should be a choice. If you want to get vaccinated, get vaccinated. Yeah. If you don't. That's your choice.
If you took part, you took part in an experiment and nobody could be held responsible.
That's your opinion and you're entitled to it. Other people would disagree with you. No, it's not a fact. That's your opinion, Pauline.
No, it's actually a fact.
This is not a vaccine show. We're not on tonight about vaccines. We're on about hospitals in general.
But I'm just saying if it's a one-tier system, you will be forced. And they're not going to give up on that agenda. They're going to continue to push it. The other thing is when you're treated so well after something is caused by something that they give you and won't account for, you're getting the special attention because they need to collect data on you. Mm. That's another point I want to make.
But don't be looking, Pauline, when we're talking about our healthcare system, right, we've had a lot of nice stories tonight. Don't be looking for the bad in everything. There isn't always a bad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's good in people too, and people and professionals as well. You know what I mean?
Any government that takes your choice needs taking control. So that's the last thing.
Yeah, Margaret has been through the healthcare system. Sadly, she had cancer at the time, and she's been through the healthcare system, and she was treated very well.
Well, there's somebody that Margaret would love to watch, as many people who are, God between us and all harm, and God love them, suffering from cancer. It is said that 80% of all disease is caused by inflammation, and inflammation is caused by sugar in your diet. There's a woman called Barbara O'Neill on YouTube. She's married to an Irishman. She's Australian. They keep taking her down. The pharmaceutical companies keep suing the poor woman. But she will tell you that. And she will tell you how to sort your diet out and the lies you've been
told. I can tell you now, there is no evidence whatsoever, Pauline, that sugar causes cancer.
Inflammation is caused by sugar.
Yeah. Okay, but there's no evidence that too much sugar in your diet causes cancer. That's not a fact, Pauline. That's somebody's opinion, right? And it's not a fact. Hang on. Margaret wants to ask you a question, Pauline. Hang on.
Pauline, you said that sugar causes cancer. Is that correct?
It feeds cancer.
Ah.
That's a fact.
Now, hold on a second. Now, you've just changed what you said, right? So you're saying it feeds cancer. A bad diet certainly doesn't help cancer. Yes, there's no doubt about that. A good diet, people who are healthier and a good diet have a better outcome when it comes to cancer. That's obviously. Hang on, Margaret wants to ask you a question. Hang on, Margaret, go ahead.
Yeah, Pauline, you see, I don't take sugar in anything.
You eat fruit, that's fructose. You drink milk, that's lactose. Anything with sugar feeds cancer. End of story.
Then why don't we all have cancer, so?
Because we all
eat food, we all drink milk, we all eat fructose and some. And don't get me wrong, by the way, a lot of these stuffs are not good for us. By the way, that are in food, I'm not suggesting it is, but we all do it. So why aren't we all getting cancer?
Well, it depends, I suppose, on our ages. It depends on how susceptible we are. It depends, for example, if you are already suffering from cancer. This woman recommends that even fruit is cut out of your diet because of fructose. And people are healed. Barbara O'Neill.
And isn't it bizarre that there are other people out there who would have another conspiracy theory and turn around and say that if you have cancer, don't go to a doctor, don't get treatment, just eat fruit and you'll be grand. And I've heard people say that too, which is equally as nutty, by the way.
I'm only telling you what the facts are, and they don't. The pharmaceutical company keeps bringing this woman in particular.
So are you telling me that there's no medication helps for cancer? None.
Well, I certainly wouldn't be treated in what we call the normal system in any cancer hospital.
Okay, so what do you say to all those people, by the way, who've had chemotherapy? And don't get me wrong, by the way, chemotherapy is not as successful as people think it is, but it is successful for people who are terminally ill to allow their lives to live a little bit longer in a lot of cases. Or in some cases, it takes away and reduces the tumour enough that a person will live a reasonably healthy life. What do you say to all of those people who have had good outcomes from chemotherapy? What do you say to them? Are they all delusional?
They were blessed. I lost two of my own sisters to cancer.
Are they all delusional, all those people? Are all those doctors and oncologists who spend years studying cancer and how to cure cancer and how to help people with cancer, are they all delusional?
They only know what they're thought.
Okay, so they're all delusional.
Pauline,
I didn't say that.
Stop. I said they only know what they're thought.
Okay, Pauline, as regards to the vaccine, there was many people who protested on the streets of Dublin against the vaccine, and an awful lot of them died because they didn't take the vaccine. And I agree with Niall, and I agree with my own choice. That was my choice to go and get myself vaccinated because I was a vulnerable person. And you know,
a lot of people didn't die because they didn't get the vaccine. A lot of people died for different and various reasons.
People died with vaccines and without vaccines. But Pauline, the point is, everybody agrees, we're all agreeing, there's a choice to be made. You make a choice. There are people out there who think, but you're just a conspiracy theorist.
An awful lot of people's deaths were put down to COVID, when in actual fact it had nothing to do with
I'm
COVID.
I'm well aware of that. Even Leo Varadkar admitted that. I'm well aware of that, Pauline. I know that. That a lot of people's deaths are the death certificate had COVID, but they didn't die from COVID, they died with COVID. It's a bit of a difference, by the way. We're going down a rabbit hole. Pauline, I'll do it another night. I don't have time to do all of that tonight. Margaret, thank you very much indeed. Pauline, thank you very much indeed. After the break, by the way, I do want to talk to Lauren White. It's a very inspiring and interesting story. And join us then. We'll just take a little break and we'll be grand. We are grand.
You're listening to Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Got an opinion?
Hello? Then get on the phone.
0818 942 105.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
As Bernardo's Giving Day draws to a close for another year, Ireland's Classic Hits Radio wants to say thanks to every one of you who got involved in this incredible cause. Your donations will help Bernardo's continue to provide essential services to vulnerable children across Ireland. And the good news is, you can keep donating now at bernardosgivingday.ie.
Because childhood lasts a lifetime.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
The aroma of freshly brewed coffee early in the morning. The soothing crackle of a real fire on a weekend escape. The returning tide on an empty beach. All moments to live for. Like experiencing the 251 Audi range, including the all-electric Audi Q6 e-tron and the luxurious Audi Q3. This is Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik.
Stand back. The Stevie Nicks Experience. Coming to Lost Lane, Adam Court, just off Grafton Street, October 12th. As Europe's only tribute to Stevie Nicks, Vicky Martin invites you on an enchanting journey through Stevie's biggest hits, from Fleetwood Mac to the present day. A hauntingly authentic live show not to be missed. Stand back. The Stevie Nicks Experience. October 12th at Lost Lane, Dublin. Tickets €28 plus booking fee from Eventbrite.
Hi, it's Niall Boylan. Weeknights from 9, I open the phone lines for your opinions. Honest, upfront and unfiltered.
The stupidity of our so-called politicians. They don't have a clue how to run money.
And you broke the law.
But I never said that I didn't break the law. Niall, all know what I'm talking about.
The Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Monday to Thursday, 9 p.m. to midnight with recruit.ie. Ireland's new online job search. Search for your dream job today on recruit.ie.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Welcome back to the show. Now, it's that kind of point of the night again where we kind of get into talking to somebody with an interesting or certainly an inspiring story. And tonight I'm going to talk to Lauren White. Lauren is a recovered alcoholic and addict who is using her suffering and journey to help other people get through their own issues. She describes herself as a mentor specializing in trauma, addiction, mental health and well-being. And she offers services such as addiction counselling, sober coaching and one-to-one sessions. On top of all of this, she has done talks all around the UK, delivered workshops in different schools, worked with the Kelly Youth Support Group in Hong Kong and has over 100,000 followers on Instagram. And she joins me tonight. Lauren, hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Good, I'm really good. Lauren, you know, obviously, people who've had problems in their lives, you know, so a lot of them go on to help other people, which is extremely noble, apart from anything else. But I want to just take you back in time, if you don't mind me doing that, and, you know, and talk about your addiction, first of all, both, you know, your alcoholic addiction. When did that start for you?
So it started for me when I was 13 years old. I know that's very young. but, I mean, to be honest, I kind of got to this point in my life where I grew up having incredibly low self-esteem, low self-worth, not feeling like I'd always fit in, and having this fear of kind of my future. And, you know, the minute I picked up alcohol or drugs or food or relationships to change the way I felt, it kind of took away all that fear for me. So it, you know, it started from a very young age when I was at school with friends. There was a lot of peer pressure to fit in. There was a lot of expectation kind of being popular to, you know, stand out. And alcohol and drugs were just there, really, you know. And I don't think we talk about it. I don't think we talk about it enough how, you know, it kind of is socially acceptable to do that.
Do you think some people are more predisposed? Do you think some people are more predisposed than others? Because otherwise everybody would do it. But are some people, just their personality, more predisposed to it? Or, as you said already, was it the fact that, you know, you didn't feel you fitted in and you had obviously low self-worth and low self-esteem? So maybe you were an insecure type of person in the first place. So is it a type of personality that falls into that trap?
Okay, so obviously, like, I didn't talk about the other side where obviously I have family that have addictions and it does run in my family. So obviously growing up, I knew that it was something that was always going to be there. But yeah, to be fair, they do believe it's a brain disease. They believe it's something that you're either born with or you're not. And then obviously environmental factors do play a part in it. But yeah, they do believe it's a brain disease. They believe that you have it or you don't. That's that preconception of an addictive personality.
Mm. And at what point do you think you're addicted to either substance, be it alcohol or drugs? What point in your life, from a young age, from 16, 15?
I think around 16 years old when I said that I'd never, ever do drugs. I justified alcohol for many years, but the one thing I said I'd never do is do drugs. When I got to the point of losing my moralistic compass and my values, at 16 years old, I started doing MDMA and ecstasy. And these are things I'd said I'd never do. And then by the age of 18, these are things that I would do. I was doing every weekend. And I was saying to myself that I couldn't do it anymore and I wanted to stop doing it, but I couldn't stop. Mm-hmm. And that was when I realized it was a problem, is when I said to myself, I'm going to stop, and I couldn't.
And you were part of that culture, I suppose. There was a culture at that time too, you know, the kind of the nightclubs and everything, because I was working in the nightclub industry at the time as well. So, you know, the nightclubs, which was the MDMA, the ecstasy was there. Everybody was kind of doing it and it was part of the culture, I suppose. And everybody thought they were cool and that's what I should be doing because that's what everybody else is doing. But everybody else really wasn't doing it.
Yeah.
There were some people doing it all right. Yeah. And sadly, some people lost their lives.
Yeah, no, but the funny thing about working in clubs is that I started working in clubs very, very young. I thought it was obviously the coolest thing ever because, you know, someone said to me, you can get absolutely wasted, you can get people in for free and you can get paid for it. So that was like the beginning of my life. The problem is that people looked at me on the outside and thought that I had the most incredible life. They thought that I was, you know, having so much fun, but when really I was drowning all my sorrows.
Yep.
Drinking and running away from the problem. So it's a really difficult one because I see this a lot on a daily basis when it comes to, you know, celebrity, fame, you know, expectation, like functionality of looking good on the outside, but really, are you actually happy or doing what's right for you on the inside?
And I saw so many people like you when I worked. I worked in the club industry for 25 years. I was a DJ.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw so many people like you. I never took drugs while I was in the industry and I never drank. I don't actually drink either. Mm-hmm. But because I kind of, I was one of these people who felt, you know, the day that I touch ecstasy, I'll end up in a coffin. I was one of these people who thought, you know, the day I start drinking, I'm going to get caught driving home. So I just didn't.
Yeah.
And apart from anything else, my father was an alcoholic and I seen what it did to him too. So, but in saying that, I watched so many, particularly young girls, probably more so, you know, who were involved in promotions and, you know, and dancers and who got involved in that, taking cocaine or ecstasy or drink. And it, it others looked at it, I suppose, as some sort of cool, exciting lifestyle, but it isn't.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's 100% that. And I think a part of me for so many years didn't want to let it go because it became my identity and it became who I am and people knew me as that. And, you know, really at the end of the day, like, I knew that I wasn't happy, but it was so beyond far from me making that decision for many years, even though I got sober at 18. It was one of those things where I was so scared to change because I was like, who am I? And I see this a lot of people when it comes to their addictions, even clients of mine, they're like, this is my identity, this is who I am, who am I without it? And actually people would much rather stay in that comfort zone, being in that pain, than actually being in the unknown because they don't know what's on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah, and people probably looked at you and thought, oh yeah, that's Lauren, she's always off her head, but she's a great crack. You know what I mean? Yeah, she's great. Yeah, that's the way. Yeah, they identified you as Lauren, the one that's always off her head, but she's great crack. And you kind of identified yourself in that probably way as well, as many people in the industry probably did at that time as well. What was the turning point for you then, or what was the kind of lowest moments for you?
Well, the lowest moment for me was when I was 18 years old and my younger brother got diagnosed with cancer, which obviously really affected me. And there were some pinnacle points in my life that, you know, really kind of, you know, made me go full-blown into my addictions because I couldn't handle life. And when my brother was 18, I just kind of went off and running and I was drinking a lot. I was doing a lot of drugs. I was also very badly bulimic. I had really bad depression, anxiety. I was in a controlling relationship. So even though alcohol and drugs were part of my problem, there was a lot of other issues as well that had led into full-blown kind of like hating myself so much. And I was very lucky and blessed to have family members that got sober, so I was able to look at their lives and want what they had. And there was a period of my life where I was making myself very dizzy and ill, and I was getting up every day and looking myself in the mirror and just self-loathing, and it just became a cycle. And then there was one day where it hit me, where I just broke down to my parents. And they were like, okay, we're going to put you into rehab. So, you know, there was no rock bottom in the sense that I ended up in hospital, I died. But it was more about a realization that I cannot do this anymore.
Yeah.
And then they were able to put me into a treatment center and to actually look at my stuff. And I think me going into a treatment center and having my time away from, you know, the clubs and the people and, you know, all the expectations.
All the influences. Kind of all those influences. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was just like me kind of actually for the first time in my life feeling my feelings.
And what was it like when you went into treatment and being sober and off the drugs for a while? We obviously initially it would have been difficult because I'm assuming you went cold turkey. So, what was it like then to be Lauren? Did it feel different to be Lauren?
Terrifying. It was terrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, I had such an ego when I went in there because I thought that no one could touch me and I thought I was superhuman. And then, you know, when I went in there and, you know, I had psychotherapists that were kind of like challenging me on things, or like, you know, even people in there that were kind of like, you know, touching my buttons, and, you know, I started to feel my feelings. I felt very vulnerable for a very long period of time, and, you know, I felt very lonely for the first however long, and I felt very lost. And, you know, I kind of really judged myself for kind of going in there because I thought I'd failed. But actually after like a month or two, it was honestly the best thing I ever did because I started to feel myself again. And I started to really kind of ask myself what I want out of life, rather than kind of what everyone else wants from me. And then when I came out of rehab, that's when I had to really, really change my life. So I had to stop, you know, surrounding myself around the wrong people. I had to go to AA meetings every day. I had to, you know, put myself into, you know, a daily routine, structure, eat well. Like, it wasn't easy. It was, like, really, really hard work. And there were many times where I wanted to drink.
I was going to say, was there temptations? I mean, did you have to avoid all the usual temptations? Avoid even walking past a nightclub?
Oh, yeah. I had to literally avoid all of that. I had to surround myself around people that were so...
I was going to say, what about all your friends? What about all the friends that you had the ones that kind of joined in with you, got pissed with you, did you have to kind of disconnect from those people?
Yeah, I had to.
Mm.
I started to surround myself around people much older than me that were sober.
Yeah.
So I was in recovery, so I had to go to like 4 or 5 recovery meetings a week. And really kind of just buckle down and just surround myself around people that were sober rather than people that were drinking all the time.
Yeah.
And a lot of people didn't get it. They didn't get it. I had a lot of people saying to me, like, why would you stop drinking? You know, that's not the end of your career. Like, you weren't that bad. Or,
yeah,
you know, because I was surrounded myself.
Yeah, they're like enablers, aren't they, really, those type of people? You know, yeah. Yo, Lauren's no fun anymore. She doesn't go out drinking with us, you know. These are kind of enablers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because some people, you didn't obviously, but some people start to believe that then, you know, maybe I'm not fun anymore. Maybe I should go out with them again and start drinking, or, you know what I mean?
100%. And like, for years, even like I'd go on dates with guys and guys would be like, what's wrong with you? People would think that there was something wrong with me. I mean, nowadays, it's acceptable to be sober. People are becoming more sober and more aware. But when I was 18, it was like, you're weird.
Yeah, I was the same. When I worked, I think people thought I was a weirdo because I didn't drink, didn't do drugs. And, you know, I was one of the biggest nightclub DJs in the city at the time. And people must have thought I was nuts. And I'd be over at the bar, you know, just getting a Coke. And somebody come over and they go, oh, you're doing a great job. Will you have a drink? And I'm going, no, you're grand. I don't drink. And they go on, just have one, sure. Like, it's like they're drink pushers. Yeah. You know, people just don't believe you don't want to drink. It's bizarre.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just socially acceptable, but also it's kind of one of those things where, you know, everyone just assumes that that's what you want to do.
Mm.
And if you don't do it, then there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. They were even surprised. Here's the maddest thing. When I was DJing, I remember these guys come over for a hen's night or a stag night in the UK. And they come over to me and they said, have you got any Charlie? And I said, lads, I don't sell drugs. I went, what do you mean you don't sell drugs? I said, I don't sell drugs. But every DJ sells drugs. I said, well, I don't. And I said, so what's the problem? And he goes, oh, every DJ in the UK sells drugs. And I go, well, I don't sell drugs. There's this kind of acceptance that I should be selling drugs because I'm a DJ. So I suppose once you move out of that and you move out of that industry and you move away from all that negativity and all that enabling, I suppose it made it easier for you then to get away from that.
Yeah, it really did. And the truth is that, I'm going to be honest, I did go back into clubs a year later, and I was still working in clubs from 19, 20 to 21, 22. And then I actually had a full-blown breakdown and went back into rehab at 21, 22.
Yeah.
So it was my second time of rehab at 21, 22. And I felt like I lost my identity again because I was doing everything for everyone else. I was so, and it was all to do with the fact that I was so scared to change.
Yeah.
And I was so scared to really accept that that was not my life anymore. And after the second trip to rehab, I realized what truly I needed to do. And that was by stop being around these people or doing what everyone else wanted me to do, even being sober, right? It doesn't matter if you're drinking or doing drugs. You're still putting yourself into these situations that aren't good for you.
Yeah.
And then I got offered to move to Hong Kong. So I was living in Hong Kong for 2.5 years.
Okay. Interesting. What was that like? That was a big culture shock.
Well, actually, there's a lot of expats there.
Yeah.
It was very English. And actually, there was a recovery there. So there were a lot of people that were sober there that I became really close to, but it was hard because, you know, I had to rebuild my life and, you know, just kind of like, you know, make so many new decisions. But what I felt was right for me was actually that I got to go away and I got to, you know, become Lauren, who Lauren always wants to be, rather than what everyone else expects me to be. So it was the most eye-opening experience I'd ever been through. But I was very lucky and blessed to have so many people in my life there that really looked after me, but also sober.
And so when did you get back to the UK then? When, what year did, or how old when you got back to the UK?
So I got back to the UK around 25, 26, so 2 years before COVID time.
Okay. And yeah. At that point, then, at what point did you decide, okay, I'm doing well here now? Or were you doing well at that stage, yeah?
I was always doing quite well. And actually, when I came out of rehab, I started working for the Amy Winehouse Foundation, going to schools, doing talks around addiction. Then obviously, in Hong Kong, I was doing it for the Kelly Group, which was going into private schools and doing talks, helping these kids understand that they don't need to turn to drinking drugs to change the way they feel. And then when I came back from Hong Kong, I started doing an addiction counselling course and then a life coaching and NLP practitioner course to become an addiction counsellor and NLP practitioner to then go and help people battle addiction. And that's what I do as a job now, which is my passion in life.
Well, here's the problem. We here in Ireland, obviously, you know, we've our fair share of addicts. And we have rehab. We have rehab centres. But the problem with the rehab centres is 80% of people don't finish the courses. And the 20% that do finish the courses, 80% of them go back on drugs as soon as they get back out on the street again. So why is rehab such as a high fail rate?
You say fail rate?
Yeah. Why does it have such a high fail rate?
I don't think rehab's for everyone. I think rehab is a type of place. I was very lucky because I was ready and willing. A lot of these people aren't ready and willing. They're not ready to surrender. They get forced kind of into doing it, whether it's their parents or their family or whatever. And actually going into rehab doesn't get you well. It takes you away from the addiction. It's the real life that you have to really battle to get well.
Yeah.
So you have to be ready and willing. So I don't think that there's going to be a success rate with rehabs. I think that rehabs just help you have time and space to realize what you want. It's actually the real world that actually works. So it's back and forth, really. But yeah. I do think that AA meetings, going to recovery, surrounding yourself around right people, getting into a habit of looking after yourself, getting into daily routines, looking at your environment, you know, learning about acceptance of yourself, self-compassion, taking yourself away from, you know, the situations and triggers, you know, speaking to someone on a daily basis. These are the things that are actually going to get you away from drinking drugs, not rehab.
Yeah. So it's really changing your whole lifestyle. You kind of have to, don't you? Yeah, you got to move away from everything that's gonna bring you back there. You know what I mean? And the enablers.
And then rebuilding healthier habits in your life. Because when you start drinking and doing drugs, by the end you have an element of low self-esteem and low self-worth. To the point where you actually hate yourself so much. And also the one thing that I always talk about is shame and guilt. The more you drink and do drugs, the more you're going to feel shame and the more you're going to feel guilt, and that becomes a cycle. So when you're away from it and you start to learn to have healthier habits, healthier routines, and being around good people, positive energy, you start to rebuild yourself and your self-esteem. And I always say to people, find your purpose. Mine was running. I became like half marathon runner. I became, you know, really into my fitness. And then by the end, I was like, why would I want to drink? Because that doesn't make me feel good.
Are they good distractions? Cancer. Is distraction good too? Because obviously that's a distraction. Do you need, if you've been an addict, is it important to always then have replace the addiction with something else, i.e. a hobby, a distraction, you for running, for example, or, you know, getting to the gym? Is it important you replace that time you spent sitting at the bar, you know, or whenever it is, sitting at home snorting cocaine? Is it important that you replace that time with something else?
100%. I mean, if you've got an addictive personality and you know, you're the type of person that's going to, you know, be prone to addictions, it's not a bad thing to have a healthy addiction and turn to healthier habits and patterns, change the way you feel. But I think you can get to a place as you get older where you can actually not have so many distractions and be peaceful in your mind, but it takes time and energy. But if you're prone to having an addictive nature, if you're going to lean to one addiction, turn to a healthier addiction instead.
Yeah.
But for me, for example, like, for many times,
getting up and running 10K with my new addiction. But now I'm nearly 12 years sober. I've given myself enough time and space to be able to really sit in my own thoughts. So mindfulness really helps me. Meditation really helps me. And journaling really helps me.
When do you stop being an addict? Because when I hear people who were alcoholics, for example, come on the air and they talk to me, right? And they say, hi, Niall, you know, I'm an alcoholic, but I haven't drank in 7 years, right? And I'm going, okay, so when are you going to stop calling yourself an alcoholic? And maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm silly. But at what point, yeah. I mean, do we need to change that idea? Because, like, I'm a smoker, okay? And I've given them up a few times, but I've always gone back on them again. So, but if I give up smoking next Wednesday, if somebody said to me the following Monday, do you smoke? I'm going to say, no, I'm not a smoker. I gave them up.
Yeah.
So why can't an alcoholic just turn around and say, no, I'm not an alcoholic. I was many years ago.
That's a really interesting question. And I can't vouch for this, but I think a lot of people that are in recovery, they have been taught or learned that identifying themselves as an alcoholic is kind of who they are. And everyone has a different opinion with this, right? So there's this huge thing in recovery where there's people that say they're recovered, and then there's some people that say, no, I'm not recovered. I'm in recovery. I'm always going to be, you know, working on myself and learning for myself, and I'm never going to be sick.
I think that's kind of self-doubt in some way, isn't there? There's a bit of self-doubt in that, isn't there?
Yeah, and to be fair, like, if I'm totally honest, what I've learned within my recovery and for years and years and years and years of being sober is that I actually don't say that I'm an addict. I say that was a part of my life. You know, I always will be in recovery, but I don't have to identify myself and put myself into a box.
Yeah.
But that's my own thing, and it's actually helped me not narrow myself down and put a lot of shame on the problem, because when I was always saying I'm an alcoholic, I'm an alcoholic, I'm an alcoholic, it would always make me feel less than or different.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh no, I'm not an alcoholic. I am who I am. And that was a period of my life that I went through.
Yeah, don't let it identify
you. I am lost.
Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're
right. Everyone's different.
Yeah, so yeah,
people may disagree with what I'm saying. People may be like, what's
No, I know. I mean, look, somebody else just texted a minute ago and said that AA and rehab only wrecks your head and makes you drink more, said somebody. But that's his experience, obviously. Maybe other people have had different experiences. Mm-hmm. But in saying that, mm-hmm. I've always had that kind of feeling. I've always thought, you know, why keep saying you're an alcoholic if you're not drinking anymore, you haven't drank in 10 years or whatever. I don't let it identify yourself or identify you. That's just my thoughts on it. But maybe other people have different views on it, and that's perfectly fine too. But look, I know you do a lot of one-to-one sessions with people now. You also give counselling. Do you have a website people can go to, by the way, if they want to read up more, if they want to have a look? Do you have your own website?
Yeah, so my website is www.laurenwhitespeaker.com. And my Instagram is IamLaurenWhite. I'm very active on Instagram. But yeah, I'm trying to give as many facts and advice on there to help people identify when they've got a problem, how they've got a problem, if they can stop. I'm actually doing something for Sober October coming up. I'm building up a sober community for people that not even just have problems with alcohol, but are sober curious.
Yeah.
Where they can surround themselves around good people. So if there's anyone out there that is interested in
sober, I like that, sober curious. I like that.
Sober curious. Yeah, yeah. It's not even for people that, you know, have an issue. It's for people that want to stop but feel shameful about stopping, or even, you know, kind of want to just cut back. And you know, I do see a lot of people feel pressure to do things that they don't want to do, and there's nothing wrong with not drinking. There's also nothing wrong with drinking. I always say it's a problem when it's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a problem when you feel it's a problem, when it's affecting your life and you feel it's a problem, then it becomes a problem.
Exactly.
But look, it's been I am Lauren White is the Instagram account if people want to go. I am Lauren White, if you want to go there, or laurenwhitespeaker.com. Or is it .com? Sorry, .co.uk, .com.
.com, I think.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Lauren, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Continued success, by the way. And keep the fight going, by the way. You sound like a wonderful person, by the way. And I'm delighted to hear you're helping other people as well.
Thank you. So do you.
Okay, Lauren, thank you very much indeed. There you go, Lauren White, who's now counselling sessions one-to-one, by the way, people, and helping other people who are going through what she went through in her life. It's always good to see somebody give them back, isn't it? Anyway, go to her Instagram account if you want to have a chat with her, or you want to talk to her, or you just want to tell her that the interview was good. And it's I Am Lauren White is her Instagram account. Thanks to Molly. Thanks to Zoe for tonight. I shall talk to you again tomorrow night. Enda Murphy is on the way, and he's going to tuck you into bed with some nice love songs.
You're listening to Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Got an opinion?
Hello?
Then get on the phone. 0818 942 105.
Ireland's classic hits radio. Damien Farrelly in the afternoon.
A great chance to win all this week from two with Skechers. So I've got a €200 voucher to give away every single day this week on the show. All with Skechers. You can browse their incredible selection of footwear, apparel and accessories for all the family at Skechers stores nationwide.
Damien Farrelly in the afternoon. Weekdays from 2 p.m.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Christmas is coming.
Oh no.
Oh yes. The Christmas Shopping Expo. Ireland's new indoor Christmas shopping fair at the National Indoor Arena, Blanchardstown, on 7th and 8th of December. Forget the stresses of Christmas shopping and get all your festive gifts and stocking fillers all under one roof. Make Christmas extra special this year at the Christmas Shopping Expo on 7th and 8th of December. For tickets or information on exhibiting at Ireland's new Christmas Gifts Fair, visit christmasshopping.ie.
Study with Progressive College, the leading provider of QQI accredited courses. Enroll now for upcoming QQI accredited courses that will make you workplace ready, including healthcare support, early learning and care, special needs assistant training, and a new special education qualification at level 7. Also enrolling now for our blended online honours degree in early childhood education and care, starting this September. Discover the future of education. Visit progressivecollege.ie.
You're listening to Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
With recruit.ie, Ireland's new online job search. Search for your dream job today on recruit.ie.
Ireland's classic hits radio. You're listening to Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Got an opinion?
Hello?
Then get on the phone. 0818 942 105.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Hi, I'm Megan Scully, and this is Crack August Kjol on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio. Nina Nigaid Nocha Kuig, Hui on Tauron, You Are Not Alone, La Michael Jackson, Snakeid Spotas Nikartaka, August Via Ban Kiela Eganomshin, Lisa Marie Presley, in some Fishon. Erin Carroll and Mian 4, Nina Nigaid Ochtu Hain, Rugga Beyonce Knowles in Houston, Texas. Aaron Cugula, Imian 4, Mila Nigaid, Kara Shea, Ruga Farrokh, Bulsara, Izanzibar, August Vishay and Taurani, Alesh and Grupa Kalil Queen, Ach, Freddie Mercury, and Tana Mavir. That's Crack August Kjol on Ireland's